role in lobbying on the state level. We go in there with the New York Women's Lobby is an umbrella organization of all sorts of different groups, feminist groups in the city and statewide groups. We go in for meetings with people, and everybody will speak on the issue. Not everybody, but I mean, you know, a lot of people from all different points of view. Heterosexual women, lesbian women, etc., and everything in between. And there's a lobby day coming up May 13th. And by the way, anybody who's interested should contact Pat Joblin at the New York Civil Liberties Union. And the bus ride, I think, is $8. We'll be dealing with four issues, and one of them will be the repeal of the sodomy bill. The other three are maternity, disability, child care, and household workers. And I think that this is a big step in the right direction. I mean, those legislatures have to see that the women's movement is behind us 100%, and they certainly are. My feeling is that lesbianism is a feminist issue, and now they're carrying it through in all the actions, and we're working together on many, many issues. And I think the same is true for lesbians, by the way, too. I think that we're all broadening our scope and fighting on a legislative level for the other issues, you know, child care, daycare, abortion, repeal, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think we all see the need for women to have some control in their own lives. And it's so dangerous for women to feel that they have to be identified as relating to men. It really, really destroys their independence. It really destroys their ability to be separate people. It's a tremendously damaging idea.
What has it been like lobbying up in Albany? Can you describe the experience?
Well, it's not the most exciting thing in the world. And sometimes it's like batting your head against a brick wall. There are some good moments, too. But the main problem is, I see it, that the legislators up there are very embarrassed about the issue. And what it means, the definition of deviant sexual behavior, just freaks them out totally. And they do not want to debate it on the floor. And I think that's really one of the main things. The other thing being their constituents. And so what they're doing is just sort of beating around the bush and saying the time is not ripe yet. And, you know, meanwhile, hundreds and thousands of people are suffering all over the state. I mean, it just makes me furious. I think that what it's going to take is there's a lot of consistent lobbying up there, a lot of letters to go in. They have to know that their constituents support the repeal of the sodomy and the passage of the amendment to the executive law, which would grant us civil rights. They have to hear it from the people that are in their districts.
Who have you been approaching?
Well, the people that I think that are most important at this point to get to, and the people that we've repeatedly gone back to, is Senator Barkley, who is the head of the Codes Committee in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And this is the committee that the bill is in, the repeal of the sodomy bill. Now, it's bottled up in his committee. In the Assembly, anybody who introduces a bill can make sure that that bill gets out of committee, or it's brought to a vote in committee anyway. In the Senate, because it's Republican-controlled, and they didn't pass some of the reform laws, rules that the Assembly did, still can bottle up a bill on the say-so of the chairman or chairwoman of the committee. And that's what's happening right now. He's waiting for the word from another one, which is Senator Anderson. And Senator Anderson is the majority Republican leader of the Senate, and I don't know who he's waiting for the word from. His basic comment has been no comment. Governor Kerry has manifested aggressive indecision about the whole matter. You know, everybody is passing the buck, and I believe that what it'll come down to is a meeting of the Republican conference up there. They meet maybe two or three times a week, I guess, and decide in private what their issues are going to be and what they're not going to be. And this, of course, is closed to the public, and we'll never know. And I think that if they decide in there that they can deal with it on the floor, then they'll let it come out of the committee. I have more hopes, possibly, for this repeal of the sodomy law than the passage of the civil rights bill, although I don't know for sure. The problems that we've been having here in the city, with the different amendments that the city council people wanted to tack onto the bill, have filtered up to Albany. And they're still worried about teachers and adoption of children and two family dwellings and numbers of things. By the way, it does not affect two-family dwellings that are owned and rented by the owner that lives in the house. Mm-hmm. I just want to make that clear, since that's such a big issue around here and the whole bottling us up here in the city council. You know, it's had its effect, and I really hope, by the way, let's talk about the city bill a little bit, Eleanor. Go ahead.
Well, Intro 554 has been in the city council in one form and another over about the past 5 years, and it's had so many numbers because it's been in so many different sessions. Mm-hmm. People may remember it as Intro 2. One of the obvious aspects of this bill is that unless the city guarantees citywide, I mean, the rights of in employment, housing, and in public accommodations, things like Mayor Lindsay's statement that gays would not be discriminated against, and the current statement out of the Department of Education that teachers will not be discriminated against on either in entry into the system or in promotion just because they're homosexual, none of these things really have quite the force that they might. I mean, they're very, very positive things, but they don't have the same force if you have no real legal recourse. And there are, in the city of New York, with the kind of housing shortages that we have, with the kind of pressure that's on people around housing, I think it's particularly important that something like this get passed. As times change and jobs are harder to get, I think it's especially important that everybody be guaranteed the right to protest if they're discriminated against in a job for reasons that have nothing to do with their abilities or with their credentials.
Yeah, but you're not saying that because if this bill gets passed that automatically people will be hiring more gays and won't discriminate against
them. No, there's no way that anybody's going to prevent someone from discriminating, but if there's no legal recourse, then not only people are virtually given free rein to discriminate in any way they wish.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter whether it's very clear-cut and above board or whether it's a lot more subtle.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons why we've expanded the definition from sexual orientation as the amendment to the human rights law to sexual or affectional preference. This is being done right now on a federal level by a bill introduced by Bella Abzug, and which we have 24 sponsors for, and we're trying to encourage this wording to be used across the country on the state level. Let me just read the definition here of affectional or sexual preference. The term affectional or sexual preference means having or manifesting an emotional or physical attachment to another consenting person or persons of either gender, or having or manifesting a preference for such attachment. It's very wordy, but in essence it broadens out the definition of in the bill so that it's not just a sexual issue. We're discriminated against on so many different levels. You know, for instance, if your boss sees you marching in a gay pride march, you can be fired. There was a case of a woman, a lesbian, who somebody called up her employer and said that she was a lesbian. Now, the company had a policy of not hiring homosexuals, and if there was any rumors of somebody being a homosexual, starting up an investigation. So the employer was rather sympathetic, although I think he could have done a hell of a lot more than he did. But what he did was he warned the woman and said, listen, there's going to be an investigation. I just want to let you know that this is going to happen. Well, so she immediately resigned because she did not want to have to go through that. This is what happens a lot of times, too, instead of the out-and-out firing. Another case is there was a woman who was up for a field representative for a certain company, and somebody phoned in and said that they had seen her at a lesbian meeting and she did not get the job. Now, this could have been a lesbian woman, this could have been a heterosexual woman. This is her for her political beliefs. And so you see this definition, affectional or sexual preference. I mean, it covers us when we want to walk down the street and hold hands with each other. If we want to wear a button, it's a much broader definition. And also it takes in all sorts of different types of people, too. It acknowledges the reality that there are differences in lifestyles and emotional attachments, as well as sexual preferences among everybody. And these differences aren't going to be used anymore as grounds for denying anyone constitutional protection.
Also, not everybody defines themselves as heterosexual or homosexual throughout their whole life. It also gives people a choice if at some time in their life they want to relate to someone of the same sex, emotionally or sexually. I think that without this kind of law, there's always this pressure to conform and to only follow the heterosexual mold. One of the things I was thinking of as Jean was talking was two people I know of who were discriminated against. One was a man who was working in a department store, and his experience was that when the department was talking about hiring more salespeople, they said, oh, we won't hire so-and-so because he looks too gay. Well, this meant not only were they not hiring the guy who looked so gay, but the man who was in the job who did not look different from the other people in the organization was, like tremendously fearful now that he too could lose his job if he happened to look too gay, whatever that meant. Another example I know of was a woman who was working in a company in Brooklyn, which is definitely not going to be affected by the current economic squeeze, and she had a very good position. And somebody said they saw her on a particular television program. She had no way of knowing that there was any kind of policy like this in her company. Nobody ever said anything about it, and there was no indications of it. And she was out in her ear the next day. No recourse.
Getting back to the lobbying of the women senators in Albany, who seems to be the most receptive?
Well, they all are, all three.
Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, I wish we had an army of them up mm-hmm. there. They've been very, very helpful with information and, steering us in the right directions. And a lot of us are novices up there and mm-hmm. really cutting through a lot of the work for us.
I remember hearing Karen Burstein talk about what an experience it was to be one of three women in the Senate. And she came and spoke to a meeting that we had last fall in which a number of women who were up for election spoke to Lesbian Feminist Liberation and to all the people who assembled to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And she described what it was like to be the brunt of the jokes of the men in the legislature and what kind of support they really needed. And one of the exciting things that happened this year was when the opening session of the legislature came this year, Marianne Krupsek was the one who opened, who dropped the gavel. So that was one of the big reasons that women wanted to go up and lobby on the opening day, you know, mm-hmm. offer her the kind of support that she deserves.
Right.
On a national level, what is being done?
Well, the National Gay Task Force is mostly the organization that's organizing the effort. There's a big call out for sponsors from every different area of the country. Right now, there's 24 sponsors, and I think most of them come from the East Coast, New Jersey, New York, and maybe a couple of other states. I'm not sure, really, but we could use a hell of a lot more. There's 240 people in the House, and we've got 24. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on that bill. One thing that we're really trying to do, too, and the Women's Lobby has come out with a statement on this, is that every bill they won't support or support the sponsoring of any bill that includes sex or marital status but does not include sexual or affectional preference. Now, this is a really big step. I don't know exactly. See, some of the bills that are already up there that include sex and marital status are probably going to go through without sexual and affectional preference on it because it's too late. But from here on in the following legislative sessions, this will be true. It just bothers me. Like the credit bill was passed last year, so they would not discriminate on the basis of sex. Now, for us to get sexual and affectional preference attached to that, it's going to take us 3 or 4 years, probably. I hate to say that out loud. But now, if we had the women's movement behind us all the way, and they didn't settle for less, it might be take a year longer, but it wouldn't take four. And I think that's what's happening right now. We're really starting to gel together and realize we're all in this together. Sometimes it's going to be necessary to just do it piece by piece, but as far as only because of the men mm-hmm. in the legislature, not because of what we're doing. It's hard to stop them once they get their hands mm-hmm. on a good bill.
Who have you gotten the most flack from in Albany?
You know what the flack is? The flack is really almost a lack of response.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nobody is going to come out and say, you queers, you, although there was mm-hmm. a couple comments made up there on the gay lobby day a couple of months ago about swishy people in the classrooms. I wasn't there in that particular meeting, but that was the most overt thing that was said. What bothers me is that you know, they'll just sit there and sort of with their hand over their mouth or shake their head or just do nothing, just blank. And then you push them on it, mm-hmm. and they'll actually say, no comment, or I, you know, cannot comment on that at this point. Now, this is where the women's movement has been so helpful, too, because we've all pressured them, and they've been forced to comment. And then we go back again, and they're really taking it very seriously now.
Also, this is where some pressure from constituents is helpful, and when we talk about writing letters, we'll be mentioning the three key people that people can write letters to, and also anybody whose district they're in would be a good person to write letters to, too.
Mm-hmm. Hey, why don't we do that now?
Senator Anderson, who's the temporary president and majority leader of the Senate, he's a Republican, he has the power to give life or death to our legislation, and it depends on... Oh, he's from Binghamton, and he represents Broome and parts of Tioga and Chenango counties. So any letter writer who's ever called that area his home should add some sort of personal note to this. And the address is Senator Warren Anderson, room 336, the Capitol, Albany, New York, 12224. I'll repeat it again. Senator Warren Anderson, room 336, the Capitol, Albany, New York, 12224. And he represents Broome, parts of Tioga and Chenango counties, and he's from Binghamton. And he's the temporary president, majority leader of the Senate, and he's from the Republican Party. And another person to write to is the chairman of the Codes Committee in the Senate. This was mentioned earlier that he's got the bill bottled up in his committee, and he's from Pulaski, New York. He represents Oswego, Jefferson, St. Lawrence, and parts of Cayuga counties. And again, if there's any area where any of the letter writers have lived, it would be a very good idea to include a personal note. The address is Senator H. Douglas Barkley, B-A-R-C-L-A-Y, Senator H. Douglas Barkley, room 609, Legislative Office Building, Albany, New York, 12224. And the third person is the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. His home is Staten Island. He represents Richmond County. And again, you should mention it if you've ever lived in this area. It's Senator John Markey, M-A-R-C-H-I, John Markey, room 913, Legislative Office Building, Albany, New York, 12224. The bill number is S-3578. You should never hesitate to write a letter about this kind of issue because the mere fact of being afraid to sign your name is very effective.
Okay, this might be a little overload, but while we're on the subject, I would like to put in a plug for the City Council. The bill that's up here, Intro 554, on the local level. Write to your City Council people, especially if you live outside of Manhattan. If you're in Manhattan, write too. Probably you could concentrate on a guy named Friedland in Manhattan. If you're from the Bronx, write to DeMarco or Ryan. Aileen Ryan, who is also the head of the General Welfare Committee, which our bill is in right now. If you live in Queens, oh, wait a minute, back to the Bronx a minute, Kaufman, be sure and write to him. He's a possible person. And Mealy also is a possible. If you live in Queens, the people you should write to is Manton, Ward, Troy, Mastropierre, and Muratori. They are people who are definitely against the bill, and I don't know how far you'll get, especially with people like Troy. The possibles in Queen are Povman, Spigner, and Valone. If you live in Brooklyn, the people that are against the bill at this point are Katz, Cute, probably Silverman, Arculio, and Golden. The people who are possible are Horowitz, Gangemi, Wright, and Berman. Staten Island, you can forget. But the people out there are pretty much all against it. Anybody out there, you can write to.
Most of this legislation affects everybody, not just gay citizens. That the state sodomy laws affect all unmarried people, and in turn, the whole atmosphere of making homosexuals criminals, but also the whole atmosphere of making particular sexual behaviors against the law is really a negative effect on the whole population. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important to see that as long as anybody is denied their rights, then everybody is affected by it in some way. And In the city, again, the kinds of discrimination that we face are sometimes very subtle, and it's very hard to prove that discrimination has occurred. But as long as there's no laws, there's no chance of even proving the most blatant discrimination.
Mm. And also, the government has no business in anybody's bedroom. It's as simple as that.
Can you repeat how, if people want to get involved in the lobbying or working on with you in the lobbying, can you give them a phone number?
They could call LFL, Lesbian Feminist Liberation, and that number is 691-5460. And anybody who wants to lobby or wants any more information, I would be glad to sit down with them, or we drive up to Albany every Tuesday if anybody's interested in coming up. We have organized bus trips. I want to re-mention again the 13th, which is Women's Lobby Day, and it's sponsored, I believe, by the New York Women's Lobby. And if you want to go on that bus trip, you should contact Pat Joblin at the New York Civil Liberties Union. And that address is, I think it's 84 Fifth Avenue.
I'd not be an able to hold my lover's hand, except under some dim lily table, afraid of being who I am. I hate to tell lies, live in the shadow of fear. We run half of our lives from that damn word queer. It's not your wife that I want, it's not your children I'm after, it's not my choice I want flaunt, just wanna hear my lover's laughter. Feel like we're animals in cages, and have you seen the lights in the gay bar, not revealing wrinkles or God forbid we reveal who we are. I hate not be unable to hold my lover's hand, stepped under some dim lily table, afraid of being who I am, no longer afraid of being a lesbian.
I'm Marcia Danib, and Linda Daniels and I are here in the studio with Gene O'Leary and Eleanor Cooper. We will be taking calls on 371-5200. 371-5200.